Hello, my friends. It's Tuesday, March 11th, 2025, and I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee, and welcome to the Radical Russ Show, coming to you live and direct from my undisclosed mountain hideaway in the beautiful state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. Coming up on today's program, burn, Tesla, burn, both literally and figuratively. We'll take a look at the plunging stock prices and public support for the electric car maker headed by Elon Musk, the richest person in the world, or maybe he's not anymore. We'll take a look at that, plus his battle with the sovereign nation of Ukraine. Then we'll take a look at the rearming of Mel Gibson and how that has affected one particular federal judge's career. Then the non-reporting of Benita Long, a tragic look at the failure of some states to report missing indigenous women to the federal database that tracks missing people. Then we head over to Washington, D.C., where threats from the Congress are forcing the mayor to paint over Black Lives Matter Plaza. Also in Washington, D.C., we'll take a look at Robert F. Kennedy Jr., our current head of Health and Human Services, with a novel approach to fighting a disease we thought we had eradicated back in 2000. We'll also take some time for another look at our segment of Boycott Idaho, the LGBTQ hate state, and our main story today, deserving of a radical rant, the disappearance of Mahmoud Khalil, and how this could affect all of us in this ongoing coup happening in our beloved United States of America. It's all coming up today on the Radical Russ Show. Our first story this morning is on the continuing degradation of the public image and stock price of Tesla, the car company headed by Elon Musk, one of the premier electric car makers, one of the first ones to jump on that bandwagon. But now progressives and liberals who flocked to that company to show their support for fixing our environment and addressing climate change are now running from these cars. We've seen a few Teslas go up in flames. I saw some pictures coming out of France where somebody had torched a Tesla dealership there. Some of those Tesla superchargers also going up in flames. Now, here at the Radical Russ Show, we do not promote any sort of violence or looting or vandalism, but we can laugh about it. So we are laughing about it here at the show. Couldn't happen to a better guy. The Tesla stock, of course, is plummeting. I just logged on this morning to see where they're at. Now, the 52-week high for Tesla stock was $488 a share. And this morning, opening bell, it's a little past opening bell. It's now quite late in the day, down to $222 a share. So less than half of what it was selling for at its peak, and has decreased some 15% just over the past couple of days. So just in a free fall, as people recognize the fascist that Elon Musk is, the destruction that he and his Doge kids are wielding all across our federal government, our entitlement system, our earned benefit system, I should say. But don't worry, Elon. There's somebody coming to your rescue. I just saw on Bloomberg that Trump says he'll buy a Tesla to help Musk after his shares have plunged. Oh, no, that's the final blow, Elon. You don't know about the hashtag everything Trump touches dies. Everything he touches dies. He gave a phone call to the Kansas City Chiefs to help them out for the Super Bowl. Boom. They lose the Super Bowl. Everything Trump touches dies. So you can expect that Tesla stock to continue to plunge. And Elon Musk, like I said, couldn't happen to a better guy, because right now, Elon Musk has also set his sights on Ukraine. Yeah, another one of these guys saying that Ukraine, you know, is just going to have to face facts and give up some of its land and just be nice to the Russians that invaded it, killed their kids, killed their families, turned their homes to rubble. Yeah, it's all Ukraine's fault. And apparently X, another one of Elon Musk's ventures, the website formerly known as Twitter, had a major outage yesterday, and Elon is blaming it on Ukraine, saying there was some sort of distributed denial of service attack, a DDoS attack against the Twitter website, which Ukraine has denied, and most cybersecurity experts are saying is full of crap. It had nothing to do with anything like that. Maybe it had to do with Elon going into Twitter and firing all the people that helped keep it working, right? Kind of like what he's doing now with our federal government. These tech bros, they have this mantra, this ideology of move fast and break things. Be a disruptor. Go in there and just, you know, start firing people and breaking stuff and ending programs. And then we'll rebuild it all from scratch in our tech image, right? Whatever they might be thinking here. Which anybody who's ever done project management or worked in a large corporation or government or business knows that there's a million moving parts. There's all sorts of institutional learning and knowledge that keep things afloat. And if you just go in and start hacking away willy-nilly at these services, at these employees, at these companies, that you're just going to have disastrous results. As we've seen with Twitter, as we've seen it losing its share to Blue Sky and other social media, as people are casting it away, and as Twitter is being recognized as being just a smoke and mirrors. There was some analysis the other day that said something like 80% of the people that are following Elon Musk on Twitter are bots, or they're not even human. They're just bots answering bots. And that's a lot of what you're getting on Twitter. If you're still out there, I'm not. I've left Twitter long ago. You know, once it turned into a Nazi pub, I had to get out. But it's fake. People that are afraid of leaving Twitter say, oh, well, I've got, you know, so many thousands of followers on Twitter. I get so much engagement on Twitter. No, you don't. No, it's all an illusion. It's all bots. It's all fake, designed to make you think that's the place things are happening when it's not happening there anymore. I had some 22,000 followers on Twitter, and I'd post stuff and struggle to get one or two likes. I'm out over on Blue Sky now at RadicalRust.com. 1,300 followers, you know, 1,300 followers, you know, well less than maybe a 20th of what I used to have. But I get 10 times the engagement. I get actual people going back and forth and having respectful discussions about the issues like Twitter used to be. It's a wonderful thing. And I'm just so glad to see that we have alternatives now, that when it comes to social media, we've got Blue Sky that is taking down X or Twitter. When it comes to electric cars, oh my God, the electric cars out now, the Ionics, the Rivian truck, a lot of great electric cars out there that are far better than these Teslas. And it's funny too, I see some Teslas driving around here in Southern Oregon, and now some of these people are starting to get the hint that, you know, they're driving a swastika car. they're funding fascism. Probably getting a lot of people flipping them off as they drive by. So much so that they're starting to put stickers on their Teslas. Things like, well, I bought this before Elon went crazy. What, you bought this in the 90s? The Tesla didn't exist in the 90s. Elon's been crazy for quite a long time, you know. The funniest thing I saw, oh my God, people that are doing, you know, full vinyl wraps, you know, when you get the logos and stuff on your car, a full vinyl wrap, they're doing a full vinyl wrap on their Cybertrucks, those ugly, you know, garbage bin looking trucks, to make them look like different trucks. I saw one that had a Toyota logo on the back of it. Another one that had been vinyl wrapped to look like a Ford F-150. It's pretty sad when you've gone out and bought the symbol of fascism these days and are so ashamed of it, you have to make it look like a Ford. Yes, and before I forget, let's also circle back to Ukraine here, because there's other news coming up this morning. The United States and Ukraine have some officials meeting in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, to discuss peace talks or some way of winding down the fighting there between Russia and Ukraine. And of course, we all know the easiest way to wind down the fighting is for Russia to get the fuck out. Get the fuck out of Ukraine. If Russia would stop fighting, the war would be over. if Ukraine stops fighting, Ukraine will be over. And the New York Times is reporting that our Secretary of State, Lil Marco Rubio, who was approved by the Democrats in a unanimous vote, mind you, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, in reporting from Pravda in the Ukraine, Pravda, Ukraine, says U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has stated that any agreement to end the war will require territorial concessions from Ukraine. This is the quote. Marco Rubio said, quote, "The most important thing that we have to leave here with is a strong sense that Ukraine is prepared to do difficult things, like the Russians are going to have to do difficult things to end this conflict, or at least pause it in some way, shape, or form." Continuing, quote, "The Russians can't conquer all of Ukraine, and obviously it'll be very difficult for Ukraine in any reasonable time period to sort of force the Russians back all the way to where they were in 2014. I cannot believe this perfidy, this traitorous behavior from our Secretary of State. Let us recall that at the fall of the Soviet Union back in the 1990s, these Eastern Bloc countries, of which Ukraine was one, had some nuclear weapons that owed to the Soviet Union. And when the Soviet Union broke up, part of the deal was that Ukraine would agree to give up its nuclear weapons. Give up its nuclear weapons so Russia could feel safe. And that in exchange for giving up its nuclear weapons, the United States and the United Kingdom would guarantee Ukraine's freedom and sovereignty and territorial integrity. We made a promise in 1994, and the Ukrainians lived up to it. We'll give up our nuclear weapons so long as you protect us, so long as we get to remain free and independent Ukraine, all Ukrainian territory. We made a promise. And now Secretary of State Lil Marco Rubio is saying, oh, well, so much for our promise. Russia went and invaded you. And well, since they can't have all of you, you got to give them some of you. Can you imagine telling the United States, oh, sorry, United States, Russia can't conquer all of you, so you're going to have to give them Alaska. Just give Alaska to Russia. How would we feel about that? No, there should be no compromise on this whatsoever. And it's good to know that the European leaders now are all meeting, discussing their options, building up their military in response to this. The other news that I heard on this recently is that the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Keir Starmer, had a talk with Trump about the United States dropping its intelligence sharing with Ukraine, and some reports that they may be doing intelligence sharing with Russia. We might be supplying Russia with the intelligence they need to kill Ukrainian civilians. So after getting a talking to from the Prime Minister of the UK, I guess Trump is relenting a bit on that, saying we're going to go back to sharing intelligence with our allies. I still just cannot believe where our foreign policy is, how this man, in the span of 2 months, has undone 80 years of American foreign policy, 80 years of Pax Americana, 80 years of a worldwide peace, or at least a European peace, established through the blood and sacrifice of U.S. and Allied soldiers in World War II. All for naught because of the bluster, the ego, the idiocy of the orange dictator, the felon in chief that runs this country at the moment. Hey there, listeners. Do you like to beat your women? And would you like to have a handgun? Well, have I got a president for you? Oh boy, this story coming out of the Hollywood Reporter just makes me sick. It has to do with well-known anti-Semitic actor Mel Gibson. Now, back in 2011, Mel Gibson was convicted of domestic violence. It was a misdemeanor conviction following beating up his girlfriend at the time, back in 2011. And because of his domestic violence conviction, he lost his handgun rights. He lost his gun rights, basically, for good reason. If you're out there beating someone in domestic violence, maybe you shouldn't have a gun. So the reason this comes up is because recently there was a task force that was convened, and a pardon attorney was in charge of this. Her name was Elizabeth G. Oyer. And she's this pardon attorney, and they were reviewing a set of cases for people that had previous convictions and whether or not they should have their gun rights restored. So in this list, they had about 95 different people with convictions that had taken their gun rights from them. And we're trying to narrow this down as to who should deserve to have their gun rights reinstated. And so they narrowed the list down to 9 people. And they sent this list to 9 people with these previous convictions who they recommended should get their gun rights back. And they sent this list of 9 people to the office of Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanch. And so Todd Blanch looks over this list of 9 people and he sends it back to the justice lawyer, Elizabeth Oyer. And Todd Blanch says, "Hey, I need you to add a name to this list of people that are getting their guns back. I need you to add Mel Gibson back to the list." Now, before we go any further on this one, you remember the name Todd Blanch, the attorney, the guy who's deputy attorney general now? Todd Blanch was the attorney that represented Donald Trump in his New York cases where he got his felony convictions. Okay. So that Todd Blanch says you need to add Mel Gibson to this list so he can get his gun rights back. Because, as he writes in his little note to her, Mel Gibson is a special ambassador to Hollywood who has a successful movie career. And that he tried to purchase a handgun recently, Mel Gibson did, but was denied because of the domestic violence conviction. Now, Oyer, the Justice Department lawyer looking over these cases, said, "That's odd. This kind of come out of left field because she didn't really have any material on the case. She'd been looking at these other 95 people, narrowed it down to 9. Mel Gibson come out of nowhere." And she says, quote, "Giving guns back to domestic abusers is a serious matter that, in my view, is not something I could recommend lightly because there are real consequences that flow from people who have a history of domestic violence being in possession of firearms," end quote. So she sent the memo back to Todd Blanch, says, "Hey, I can't recommend he gets his gun rights back. Guy beats his spouses." A couple hours later, she gets a phone call from a superior up there at Department of Justice, says, "Hey, are you flexible on this? Could you see your way to switch your position on this?" And then explained to her that Mel Gibson has a personal relationship with President Trump, and that alone should be sufficient basis to make a recommendation, and that she would be wise to make that recommendation. And from that point, the call gets even worse and becomes more bullying. She gives a response, "Hey, let me think about it. I'll get back to you." Then she gets back to him on Friday and says, "It's ultimately up to the attorney general. It's really up to the attorney general, Pam Bondi, but I'm not going to recommend that he get his gun rights restored." Let's be nice. If you're someone who likes beating women, to have Trump in office these days, huh? That's what we need. We need Mel Gibson running around with a handgun as he is special personal ambassador to Hollywood. These next 4 years are going to be tough. And for anyone out there who's been a victim of domestic violence, keep your head down. It's going to get tough out here. It's a sad story coming out of Washington State, and one that happens far too often, and that is the disappearance of indigenous women. The story on NPR details this woman, Benita Long. She's a member of the Yakima Nation, and in spring of 2022, her family realized that she hadn't been heard from for weeks. She gets monthly payments as a member of the Yakima Nation, and they were not being spent. Her money was just accumulating in the account for 2 months. And like many people who are suffering, she's struggled with addiction and homelessness. And it got reported as missing to the Yakima Nation police. But the investigation has gone cold. Since March 26, 2022, she was last seen outside a motel in Toppenish, Washington, not far from the Yakima Nation. And she's just become another one of the many missing or murdered indigenous women, and many who come from that Yakima Nation. And the frustrating part of the story is that we have a federally funded database called the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. And it's a federal database to collaborate across the states, pool information from various state, local, tribal, federal law enforcement agencies, families, and medical examiners to help solve cold case missing persons cases. But NPR took a look at this, and they focused on a couple of states, Washington and New Mexico, for two reasons. Number one, those states have laws that require submission of missing persons cases to that federal database. Not every state does. And Washington and New Mexico also have their own separate state lists of missing persons. So they took the Washington state list and they compared it to the national list, and they found about 2,400 people just in those two states, Washington and New Mexico, that were not included in the federal database. Now, law enforcement agencies that were contacted about this said that inputting data into the national system is cumbersome and time-consuming. Oh, no. Goodness, it's cumbersome. And it could take time to find someone's missing loved one, to add some text to a database is troublesome, is hard. And what if that's your mom? What if that's your sister? What if that's your wife, your daughter, who's gone missing and some federal bureaucrat wants to tell you that the IT system is too difficult? Now, look, I know I've worked in state government. I've worked with some pretty old, decrepit database systems. I can understand that feeling. But we're talking about people's lives here. What's it going to take to update the database? What's it going to take to hire some data entry people? I don't have much hope for it in these next 4 years, given that we are talking about indigenous women pretty low down on the list of priorities for the Trump administration, I'm sure. I hope it's not low down on our list of priorities. These people need some help. This database is helping. It's resolved nearly 47,000 cases of missing and unidentified people since 2007. And there are currently 16 states that require the use of this database. Only 16. My state of Oregon does not require submissions to the national database. It's well past time that we make this a federal priority. We make this a priority in all the states because every one of us is important. Every American deserves to have a law enforcement system that cares for the return of their loved ones, for the serious investigation of their disappearances. Continuing erasure of all that is not white and delightsome continues in the United States of America under the Trump regime. The most recent example takes us to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where in June of 2020, activists painted the phrase Black Lives Matter on two blocks of 16th Street, about a quarter mile from the White House. It's been known now as Black Lives Matter Plaza. Literally the letters as wide as the street, like you can see it from space almost. It's just huge, this Black Lives Matter Plaza. And in 2021, the mayor of DC said the memorial would be permanent to commemorate the protests over the death of George Floyd. But last week, one of these representatives, this Republican from Georgia named Andrew Clyde, introduced a bill to paint over the Black Lives Matter mural, to rename the area instead of Black Lives Matter Plaza, to rename it Liberty Plaza. And if Washington, D.C. doesn't do it, they're going to cut off federal funds. Muriel Bowser, the mayor of D.C., responded on X. She said, quote, "The mural inspired millions of people and helped our city through a very painful period. But now we can't afford to be distracted by meaningless congressional interference." So now crews are there painting over Black Lives Matter Plaza. Back to just plain old pavement. Back to the name and changing the name to Liberty Plaza. Because this coup in progress, this fascist takeover of the United States, if this doesn't show you that its goal of make America great again is to make America white again, this should show it. They just literally cannot countenance the recognition of Black people, of gay people, of disabled people, of women. It's all about making America the white Christian nationalist homeland. Which, I've been thinking about this a lot lately, and from a certain perspective, you can kind of see why they consider themselves the true Americans, right? And even our media does, to an extent, thinks of people like these as real Americans, right? Because if we really dig down into what America was founded on, it was white Christian nationalism. This was a place where white people showed up, said, hey, we're going to take all the brown people's land. We're going to have the black people build all of our infrastructure and our economy. Then we'll import some Asian people to build our railroads across the West. You can see why they think this is a white country. I heard Elon Musk the other day was talking about how empathy is the greatest sin. The biggest sin of Western civilization is empathy. Well, of course it is. Of course empathy is their enemy. My God, if our ancestors had empathy, they could have never given blankets full of smallpox to women and children. Boy, if you had empathy, you'd think, my God, could you imagine watching your children die of smallpox? I mean, if we had any empathy, our forefathers couldn't have stuffed 600 black people into the bowels of a ship for 6 months, chained to the floor in their own filth. Throwing the bodies over if they happen to die, throw them overboard. A people with any sort of empathy could never have broken up families and kept the mother and father enslaved and then sold the children off to different owners, spread the kids all across the country. A people with empathy could never have done that. A people with empathy could never have looked across the Great Plains and said, hey, you know how we could get rid of all these Indians? What if we slaughtered all their buffalo? Have you seen that picture, that old timey picture of the literal mountain of bison skulls? That's like 30 feet high, and there's a guy standing on top of the bison skulls, millions of bison skulls. We literally committed ecocide. We literally tried to wipe out a species in order to wipe out a group of people. Could a people with empathy have ever built the United States the way the United States was built? Hell no. So of course they think empathy is a problem. Empathy stops you from conquering. Empathy stops you from colonizing. Empathy stops you from enslaving. And empathy would make you think that, you know, people working a full-time job ought to have a living wage. Empathy might make you think that kids dying of measles is a bad thing. So it's sad to me that something was declared permanent in 2021, just 4 years later, is being erased. And erased on the threat of the withholding of federal funds. Long past time that Washington, D.C. was made a state. And it's long past time that the states and the cities, in this case, start standing up to that federal blackmail. Oh, we'll withhold your federal funds. It's time for states to say, oh yeah, we'll withhold our federal taxes then. Let's play that game. Let's play the game of you want to withhold federal funds for having Black Lives Matter painted on a street? Then the 700,000 residents of Washington, D.C. just won't send any federal taxes in this year. How about that? Now, of course, nobody wants to be the first one to do that and be the one left on the hook for, you know, tax evasion. But it's about time some of our elected leaders started thinking in these terms of general strikes and tax revolts. Because if we don't start thinking in those terms, other people are going to start thinking in Second Amendment terms. The measles outbreak in West Texas continues. There have been nearly 200 confirmed infections, 23 hospitalizations, and one death of an unvaccinated child. It's the first time we've had a death in about a decade from measles, a disease that we had declared eradicated in 2000 because we'd done such a great job getting everyone vaccinated for it. But now, of course, we've got Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in charge of the nation's health, crazy as that is. And he was recently on the Fox Nation, the Fox News Channel subscription service there, giving an interview. And he said a whole bunch of things that need to be called out. He first said,
is the correlation between...
I'm sorry. I'm going to do my RFK impression. We see a correlation between people who get hurt by measles and people who don't have good nutrition or don't have a good exercise regimen. Okay. To suggest that eating right and exercising is going to prevent you from getting measles, the most communicable disease there is insane, is ludicrous. Now, there's a kernel of truth there. Yes, having good nutrition and good exercise makes you healthier, sure, and boosts your immune system, okay, but it's not a protection against an infectious disease. He says that we want the CDC to look at our vaccine-injured kids and look them in the eye. They've not done a good job of quantifying the risks of vaccines. The risks of vaccines. The minuscule risks of vaccines. Like, I don't even know where to start with these people. Through the early 20th century, we had people dying of polio, diphtheria, mumps, tetanus, measles. And one of the greatest scientific achievements in all of human history has been the development of vaccines. Hell, go even before the 20th century. We can go all the way back to our founding fathers who were doing basic type of vaccinations, not with needles and stuff, but like exposing people to pneumonias and such to build up their immunity. We have a long history of vaccination in this country. And now, in just these last 20 years, through quacks like RFK and Jenny McCarthy and some of the others out there, we have people that are actively refusing to vaccinate their kids, thinking they're doing them a favor. Some of them even purposefully infecting them, taking them to so-called measles parties. The insanity of this. Kennedy also claimed there are lots of studies showing that natural immunity from catching measles and other diseases helps the immune system also fight cancer, cardiac disease, and allergy conditions. Yeah. Kennedy is saying if you just let yourself get exposed to these diseases that you could get vaccinated for, that when your body builds its natural immunity to measles or whatever else, that then you're going to be better off fighting cancer, heart disease, and allergies. There is no research to back up this claim. He is talking right out of the department of his ass. And this will get people killed. I just hard to believe how quickly we are backsliding on this. People are dying. People are catching easily preventable diseases. And the person in charge of our nation's health is cheering it on. Time for our regular segment on Boycott Idaho, the handmade state. That's right, calling on you to boycott Idaho, specifically Idaho potatoes, Albertson's grocery stores. There's a few others we'll talk about, but this reason for today is that Idaho is the LGBTQ hate state. Boy, there's not very many states out there doing more to make gay, lesbian, and transgender people feel unwelcome than my birth state of Idaho. Let me run down for you just a few of the laws out there that make Idaho the hate state. In Idaho, it is a felony to provide the health care that trans kids need to escape the increased risk of suicide, because providing gender-affirming health care for transgender kids in Idaho is a felony. According to the ACLU, the felony law bans puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and certain surgeries for transgender youth, threatening medical providers with felony charges and up to 10 years in prison. Now, when these things come up, I always like to point out, nobody's forcing this on kids. Nobody's bringing a kid in and say, put this kid on puberty blockers now. I don't want him. No. In these cases, the kid is trans and wants to go on the puberty blockers. And the parents agree and think that would be a good idea. And the doctors agree and think that would be a good idea. Why does it need to go to anyone else at this point? The parents want to do it. The child wants to do it. The doctors think it's okay. Why do we need some Republican legislature to say it's not okay? These people aren't doctors. These people aren't pediatricians. They're barely decent farmers. And they want to deny life-saving health care to these kids. I've heard their arguments. The argument is, well, these kids are just too young to be making such a decision. Their minds aren't fully developed. They can't understand they're taking on a risk that could leave them with permanent, irreversible physical damage. It could also cause lifelong effects on their mental health. Plus, there's a great deal of social pressure surrounding this decision. And we can't know for certain if they're really making that decision for themselves or, you know, because of the peer pressure. And there could be those who make this decision and then excel in life and thrive. But there's also some of those people who make that decision and they regret it. And they can't undo that decision. They can't undo the effects that it's had on their mind and body. I'm talking, of course, about the decision to play tackle football, which never seems to occur to the What About the Children chorus when they're rallying against transgender healthcare for teens. Yeah, tackle football. Lifelong physical and mental effects, chronic traumatic encephalopathy to the brain, breaking bones, tearing ligaments, harming the body. Oh, and there's a lot of peer pressure to play football, believe me. Oh, it'll make you popular. You'll be one of the cool kids. Oh, maybe you can make it to the NFL and be a pro. And yet nobody ever seems to think the kids are making a bad decision there. Nobody ever seems to think the parents are risking their kids' health there. Go ahead, play tackle football. But get puberty blockers? No, we couldn't do that. That's not the only anti-trans law going on in the state of Idaho. In Idaho, dead naming and misgendering trans people is proactively protected in the law. So you want to harass a trans person, constantly use the wrong pronouns, call her sir, call him ma'am, whatever. You're protected in Idaho. You're allowed to do that. And the senator who brought this up is Senator Ben Adams. He represents the city of Nampa, which is where I was born. He explained that it's just common sense to allow people to dead name and misgender trans people. It's common sense. Here's what he said, quote, "Just because you say it, it doesn't make it real. I have a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old. And if I wear a gorilla suit, my child might actually believe I'm a gorilla. But that doesn't make me a gorilla. I'm still a human being in a gorilla suit." I have my doubts about the human being part, Senator. He actually said that on the Senate floor. That's part of the public record. Comparing a person's transgender identity to fooling a 3-year-old by wearing a gorilla suit. That's the level of understanding we are dealing with in the handmade state. And it's not just the T in the LGBT they got a problem with. They got a problem with the L, the G, and the B as well. In my hometown of Nampa, which I was just mentioning, right, where Senator Ben Adams called trans people gorillas, there was a very brave gentleman last year who held the first ever LGBT pride event in Nampa. Now, I got to explain a little bit about Nampa and Idaho geography here. Boise is the big city, right? Everybody knows Boise, Idaho, right? Boise's in Ada County and pretty much takes up all that county, Boise and Meridian. The next door county to the west is Canyon County, and Nampa's the big city there. And Nampa is to Boise as Orange County is to Los Angeles, all right? So, like, all the conservative people who work in Boise live in Canyon County. They live in Nampa, where it's much more conservative. So, it was just, I was stunned to hear that anybody dared to put on a pride event in the first place. But when they did, the mayor of Nampa, Debbie King, put out a statement saying that the event went against what she, the city council, and many in Nampa believed, but the city's lawyer told her she has to respect the organizer's First Amendment rights. The mayor went out of her way to say, well, you know, we're against the gay. We're all against the gay. But, you know, I guess those gays have First Amendment rights, too. I guess we better let them have their pride event, even though we don't want them to. The mayor of my hometown is officially against the gay. It's just crazy. And it extends to also an open mocking of pride. There's a bar in Idaho, in Eagle, which is also in Ada County. It's kind of, so Eagle would be the Holmby Hills, Beverly Hills of Boise. That's where all the rich, rich people live, in the Boise area. They have a bar there that last year during Pride Month celebrated Heterosexual Awesomeness Month, saying that without us, nobody would be here. It's a place called the Old State Saloon in Eagle. And they also had every Monday would be Hetero Male Monday. Any man dressed like a heterosexual male will be entitled to a free draft beer. Okay. Straight pride. Right. Because, you know, straight folks, we just don't get enough respect, I guess. And that same bar also has a conspiracy theory trivia night where you can win an AR-15 in a raffle. That's Idaho. And yet another reason everybody should boycott the handmade state. If you're checking your calendar on the continuing creep of fascism in the United States, we are now at the disappearances phase. This is a story of Mahmoud Khalil, who was arrested at Columbia University. He is the leader of Columbia University's pro-Palestine movement, and as he returned home Saturday night, he was arrested by ICE, despite the fact that he has a green card. The ICE officials said that they revoked his student visa, which is irrelevant because a lawyer said, hey, he's got a green card. ICE said they revoked that too and hung up on her. Though they think that Khalil is at an ICE detention facility in Louisiana. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez condemned the detainment, calling it tyrannical, writing that violating the rule of law, actually, you are shredding the Constitution of the United States to go after political enemies, seizing a person without reason or warrant, and denying them access to their lawyer is un-American and tyrannical. Anyone celebrating this should be ashamed. If the federal government can disappear a legal U.S. permanent resident without reason or warrant, then they can disappear U.S. citizens too. Anyone, left, right, or center, who has highlighted the importance of constitutional rights and free speech should be sounding the alarm now. Well, this alarm has been going off for me for a few years now. I was living in Portland at the time when they had the mass protests going on, and there were vans that were disappearing activist protesters out in the streets. Vans of unmarked, jackbooted thugs grabbing people off the streets, taking them away to undisclosed locations. This isn't new, but it's definitely ramping up. Now, Trump, of course, brayed about this on his Truth Toilet. He wrote, quote, following my previously signed executive orders, ICE proudly apprehended and detained Mahmoud Khalil, a radical foreign pro-Hamas student on the campus of Columbia University. This is the first arrest of many to come. We know that there are more students at Columbia and other universities across the country who have engaged in pro-terrorist, anti-Semitic, anti-American activity, and the Trump administration will not tolerate. Many are not students, they are paid agitators. We will find, apprehend, and deport these terrorist sympathizers from our country, never to return again. If you support terrorism, including the slaughtering of innocent men, women, and children, your presence is contrary to our national and foreign policy interests, and you are not welcome here. We expect every one of America's colleges and universities to comply. Thank you. Thank you. Nice to be polite there, right? Well, first of all, if we're not going to tolerate anti-Semitic activity, why the hell are you giving Mel Gibson his gun rights back? Seems a little hypocritical like this. And if You support the slaughtering of innocent men, women, and children. Why are you giving intelligence to Russia to slaughter innocent men, women, and children in Ukraine? And terrorism, slaughtering of innocent men, women, and children. When we're talking about the utter genocidal destruction of Gaza, an area, by the way, just for my notes, since, you know, I'm the Idaho guy, I was telling you about Boise and Nampa, you know, Ada County and Canyon County. That metro area is the same size as Gaza, literally. Like, from the east side of Boise to the west side of Caldwell, from the north edge of Eagle to the south edge of Cuna, that area is the same size as Gaza, but it's only got about one-fifth the people. So when I was following all this, and you know, they'd say, oh, all the refugees in Gaza that are in the north, they're going to have to move to the south. I got to thinking, gee, what would be like to have 50,000, 100,000 people in Boise having to walk to Caldwell and find a place to live? This all became very real to me when I could imagine the sizes we're talking about. It's not a large area. So basically, Trump is coming out here saying any support for Palestine is going to get you kicked out of the country, equating support for Palestinians as being pro-Hamas. They are not the same thing. Maybe some people are pro-Hamas. I'm not. But I am definitely for the Palestinian people to have their own right of self-determination, to have their own state in which they can live, free from the apartheid rule of Israel. And talk about your birds of a feather got to stick together. Imperial colonizers kicking the brown people off their land so they can steal all the best views, best places for the Trump Towers. This is getting serious. And you think it's just the Hamas sympathizer here, the pro-Palestinian guy is what they want to paint him as being pro-Hamas. But when they want to disappear you, they'll find a way to paint you as pro-something. Pro-something bad. This is not the way we run this country. It's getting time for us to take to the streets. It's getting time to start shutting stuff down. Tax revolts, general strikes, occupations. This isn't going to end without some force. And it can be the soft force of protests, occupations, and sit-ins, and strikes, and tax revolts, or it's going to have to be the hard force of guns and guerrilla fighting. You don't put a fascist in power peacefully and then remove that fascist peacefully. History shows they don't go without a fight. Last time we tried to remove this fascist, they attacked the Capitol. What do you think happens the next time? What do you think happens in the elections of 2028 when Trump loses? Oh, well, time for a peaceful transition of power then. No, we're going to get January 6th, except this time a January 6th where the National Guard is on his side. A January 6th where there's even more support for the ongoing coup. And I need people to start getting their heads around this fact that there are no easy, simple, show up once and vote ways to get out of this. Already, we need to question the integrity of our federal databases, of our federal information technology. These Doge boys have been running around all the time with right access, probably putting backdoors, trapdoors, all sorts of hidden software tricks into our government. Even if we manage to get Trump out of the White House and restore some semblance of democratic order to this country, it's going to take years to root out all of the damage that's been done. Years. They've gotten to the point where they're willing to disappear dissidents. We need to recognize that a war is on. It's time for our democratic leaders to recognize that a war is on and either lead, follow, or get the hell out of the way. Well, that's all the time we've got today for the Radical Rush Show. Thanks for joining me this morning. I appreciate your support. Again, we are an audio-only podcast available on Spotify, Apple Music, and everywhere you get your podcasts. And it goes down smooth. Hey! You can reach me at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. You can reach out to me on social media, BlueSkyRadicalRuss.com. And there is a live call-in number here. You can actually call in, leave a message. Might play your message on the air. You got a question, a comment, a concern, just call 877-RUSS-420. That's 877-877-420. Maybe you'll make it to the air. Roadrun here at Rolla J Studios in my beautiful undisclosed mountain location in the state of Jefferson region of Southern Oregon. I'm Radical Russ Belville, your Red State refugee. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other.